It may have taken until the very last real episode for Archer to be good at being captain of the Enterprise. But our boy, he got there at the end here on V'ger Please, a heinous trip at Warp 5. My name is Joseph.
I'm excited to watch Sam Beckett get to finally jump out of this role. I'm your co-host, Peter.
Peter, before we launch into our discussion this week, I got a couple things. First, I received something I receive so rarely, so I want to talk about it. I got an email from one of our fans.
They do that? I thought it was all just Discord.
It's made up. Just Discord and occasional Facebook boomers. No. We have disjointed communication with our fans, not from lack of trying, which is kind of like a generational divide, where we have some people who are on the Facebook group and we just want to be able to stay in touch with them and they don't want to do Discord. We got people on Discord who don't want to go to Facebook. But if you want the true blue boomer way of capturing my attention and making me like really happy to interact with you, write me a fucking email at featureplease@gmail.com. Shit will work. You'll get paragraphs. We had a fan, June, who made a point of reaching out and saying, "Hey, I really loved the show. I caught on to watching it and had to go back and watch all of Voyager so I can understand all of your stupid in-jokes." And I can only imagine how daunting that must be for anybody that tunes in now. And said a lot of great things about the show, really gave us some good feedback. And also even tried to help us out with what our catchphrase for my intros will be for DS9. And the pitch was a vile visit. So we had a heinous trip. Before that, we had a hateful journey. So a vile visit, maybe to DS9, maybe to Bajor, maybe to Cardassia, Gamma Quadrant. We workshop that. I like where we're starting with that.
Maybe we put something up and we do a vote. That can be a fan's choice thing there. But beautiful email. Made my day. You know, you and I are doing this for fun. The Patreon's there to basically pay the broadcast costs. You and I both work our slave wage jobs.
We sure do.
You know, I'm here to talk to you about Star Trek and have a good time doing it. I'm thankful we've got other people out there willing to listen to our bullshit and participate and, you know, joke along with us. And it brings me immense joy and happiness to know that it can brighten up some other people's day on their ride to work and hopefully without children's ears listening, as I found as my kids have gotten older.
Yeah, it's like, oh, maybe not that. Kids, maybe not, but yeah, same. Obviously, like Peter and I have been doing this for over 5 years now. It's kind of crazy. I know. And
my wife's so pissed. She's like, "How many episodes do you have left to go?"
Oh, like this, your kids are going to be in high school before we're done with this.
I'll talk more about it when we do the series rip or whatever. But she's like, "How many more episodes do you have?" This, I was like, "Well, you know, two or three." She's like, I don't know what was happening. All I remember was trying to watch it with you, and it was a blue room. And I was like, yeah, the decon chamber.
It's really blue.
Like, and it was just like Skinemax. And I'm like, you are absolutely right for checking out there. Most people with common sense checked out there, and I do not blame you at all.
Yeah, it is quite. It'll be an interesting discussion to have. You're right. We should save that for this whole series rip. But speaking of, I wanted to bring that up. Actually, let me go back. You're right. We only do this for fun, but we really do enjoy it. Like, you and I got into this because we like talking about Star Trek with each other, and it's a great excuse to do so. And we're happy to have other people listen. In fact, it brings us tremendous joy. So we thank our fans that contribute things a lot, like Jack and his crazy choose your own adventure game he made.
Amazing.
For the coworker murder simulator.
Is that a sticky post on Discord? If it's not, it needs to be.
Absolutely.
That is a work of art.
It is a work of art. It's literally a work of art. We've got multiple theme songs, thanks to Ian and Sarah, for multiple vibes, including a truly classic heavy metal cover for the Mirror Universe stuff that, you know, thankfully we'll get to use again for DS9. We're just going to use that again.
Yeah, for whatever.
And we've got other fans who just love to contribute stuff in discussions that They kind of got together and did that video with Robert Picardo for 100th episode.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, we've got the Australians. It's, but if there's a ton of you who are out there who just listen all the time, and you don't necessarily feel the need to interact. You don't feel the need to get on Discord or Facebook or write an email or tweet anything. And that's awesome. I totally get it. Like, you don't want a semi-parasocial relationship with some people talking about Star Trek on the internet. That might be weird for you. I totally understand. But we want you to know you're awesome. We appreciate it. Anything you want to do to share the show so that other people will listen will be great. And you know what? If you want to email us or be on Discord or be on Facebook or whatever, go for it. Because we actually like talking about Star Trek with anybody. That includes you.
And you know what? If you're just a normal person looking to pass your time in just the most innocent way possible, once we get back into Deep Space Nine, the store is going to be up. You can get on there. You can buy some stickers and you can just vandalize all of the cars in your neighborhood. I would highly suggest putting those stickers over the side view mirrors.
Yeah.
So everybody can
specifically.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the right way to spread the fandom, I think.
Absolutely. Crime. We're encouraging crime to be committed here on the internet. No, we're not. Please don't. Please don't ever do that. Don't sue me. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And also, if you're very, very normal and I happen to be in the city you're in, I will buy you dinner if I get to talk about Star Trek with you for an hour. That's kind of a threat, I understand. Only one person ever took me up on it. So thanks to you, Marcus. Appreciate you.
Whatever trunk you're currently rotting away in now.
Oh, no, he's alive. I assure you, I posted from his... No, he posted from his Facebook. That's what I meant. Anyway.
Joe's winking at the camera right now, for those of you who don't see.
I want to wink at the camera because this episode absolutely seduced me. What was the name of it?
This is Season 4, Episode 21, Terra Prime. First aired May 13th, 2005. Look at this. Look at all these arcs wrapping up. This is Terra Prime 2 of 2, Arc Section 31. In the 22nd Century, 4 of 4, Arc, Xenophobic Humans, 3 of 3. Teleplay by Judith Reeves Stevens and Garfield Reeves Stevens and Manny Coto. Story by the same people plus Andre Bramis, directed by Marvin Rush. In-universe date, January 22nd, 2155.
You got all your creative Season 4 hands on deck, right? These are all names that we've gotten to know this last 20 or so episodes. High quality entertainment out of all of them. And this is it. This is the real, actual, factual series finale of Star Trek Enterprise. When they aired this, they aired it the same night they did These Are the Voyages. So this came back to back with what we're watching next week, unfortunately, which is like quite an up and down journey.
Which is funny because I'm looking at These Are the Voyages right now, which is the last one. And this is written by Rick Berman and Bram Braga, directed by Alan Croker. So it's like, what a con. I haven't seen the last one, obviously. Maybe I'll come out of it saying, hey, it wasn't so bad. But based on basically the entire fucking internet's feelings, I'm going to go ahead and trust that next one's going to be shit because it's Enterprise and that's well within its wheelhouse. But episode 21, fresh young talent.
Oh,
yeah. Episode 22, old and busted. And what a contrast of here's what the show could have been had you not been front loaded with two people who just are running on empty. And then you got those guys coming back to close the series out and shit the bed as the final note.
And it's the real tragedy of Season 4 of Star Trek Enterprise is it's such a brief but very vivid look at where Trek could have continued to go if it had been left in more capable hands. It really could have been something that became more dynamic and interesting and engaging, even if it still had the same DNA attached to it. A combination of more modern filmmaking and production and writing ideas with some of the best things that came out of the peaks of Trek, like in DS9 and TNG, with just a bit of realness, right? Like just a touch of grass, so to speak. And so many people have no concept it ever existed. They're big Star Trek fans, and they just haven't really ever found out about this. And what did we find out when our own fans started going through Enterprise, Peter? What did they tell us? couldn't fucking stop watching this. Couldn't stop. Burnt through the whole season like that.
Past a certain point. You know, Jamie specifically was real rightfully turned off about the prospect of us watching and stuck it out like a trooper and slogged. And that's not us overreacting. Again, I said even my own wife, who granted is not, you know, a Star Trek person, but couldn't bring themselves to stomach watching how bad the first couple episodes were. And yeah, once you hit that point, getting up towards the end of season two into season three, bam, 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 bam. 2 weeks later, you've burned through everything. Mikey watched it, didn't he?
He sure did. Yeah, he actually, he watched the whole series and then got real excited of the fact that we were doing it. But it was like, then I had to reacquaint him with time. Because our friend Mikey, he's a great guy. He's a really wonderful, warm dude. But he has difficulty with understanding the flow of time, probably due to prodigious use of a particular herb that has become more and more legal in the United States over the last couple of years.
That oregano, yeah.
Yeah, he's just been hitting the oregano bottle a little too hard, and he just doesn't understand, like, oh, no, buddy, it's going to take us 2 years to get to the part that you're talking about. You have to wait until we're there.
We're here.
Yeah, we are. Great ending. This is a great way to end the show. Kind of weird, but this whole season works, and this whole series ends up working in a way because they can get it all tied up. It's straining. You wish they had more, but they got there.
Right. And that's what I would say is it's the best way to end the show under the situation that they under the conditions that they had.
Yeah. Absolutely. This is a beat end game. Let's simplify it. Is this ending of these two episodes better than Endgame?
Yes. Because is this stuff we should be talking about at the series four rip? I don't want to cut our content short.
I think like this is, we're talking about the episode, you know, like let's put it in some context.
The good part of Endgame, as I remember it now, however many, what's it been, a year since we watched? I don't know. Time has no meaning for me either.
Since we watched Endgame?
Yeah.
We watched Endgame back in 2021.
Yeah. So I guess that's a year. In my mind, Endgame was good because Voyager finally got to come home, and that was the one of three times in Voyager that we got to advance the story forward.
And then the show ended, like, immediately.
Right, and that's, you know, time heals all wounds, so the fact that who the fuck knows what happened still rings loudly, and, you know, we were just talking about Voyager Season 8.
Yeah.
And you know, everything good that he was doing with that, that it's a shame, you know, the writers never gave us. The bad stuff is that it just continued to clown the morgue, the ne'er-do-well underdog cousins of the big bad Borg, and just really go off the rails in a way that only somebody doing cocaine off a crocodile's tail could.
You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, they just really missed the mark with that Voyager. Like, hey, what's important here? The voyage home and getting home and family and all that. And by the end, Voyager was just a corpse fucking robot hell-bent on seeing how many different holes it could stick its dick into the corpse of the Borg.
In comparison, Demons and Terra Prime just leagues ahead. And our teaser, we're right where we left off, right? Like, this is a very clean two-parter. We've got Space RoboCop up there, still monologuing, still like, I'm not done. I'm old Manny Koto's old buddy, apparently, and I'm gonna milk this for all it's worth.
Jump back over that, too. Like, Rick Berman and Bran Braga, for all, I guess, power they would have had in Hollywood at some point at their peaks, the fact that they never really brought big names. I mean, there would be shit like The Rock, but I'm sure that was UPN shoving him in there.
Oh, yeah.
You had what's his face from Seinfeld?
Jason Alexander, yeah.
What are some of the other big gets that they had?
terms of guest stars.
Yeah.
Tom Bergeron, who was in last week's episode too, by the way.
Was he?
Yeah. That How random alien that? Had the translator, and it was like this real, real nice voice on the translator. That was Bergeron in the makeup and Bergeron doing the voiceover after.
Shame on us for not calling attention to that one.
I think I mentioned when Tommy Burge was on the Desert Crossing or whatever, I think I mentioned like he shows up in like a fourth season episode, but you know, it's even in more makeup.
Why not, man? If you're Tom Bergeron, get that
fucking... Yeah, get on. I want to be on Star Trek. Fuck it.
I want to be in that makeup chair 8 hours for 3 seconds on screen. You know, and I'm not saying Peter Weller is the biggest star of all time, but like he's a solid get. Especially for
people
the
people fucking know, like
it's RoboCop. I mean, it was like one of the biggest movies, you know, out there, and he fucking kills it. You got him in a two-parter, and he really holds up his end of the thing. Like Manny Coto cannot be praised enough, I think, for his work on season 4.
They try to block the transmission, they can't. So Terra Prime gets this whole message out,
and it's a good message too, right? Again, Paxton rides this line of being clearly and demonstrably evil, but not unhinged. Maybe he is unhinged. It's a good amount of like villainous, but also grounded and touching on points where he just doesn't seem like he's purely a character of fiction and fantasy.
Yeah, like his evil is very like measured in a very specific way in this extended like monologue, which is kind of happening on partial off screen because there's action between everyone on the NX-01. And he's saying, because we understand the sanctity of life, we're giving all the aliens 24 hours to leave and we guarantee them safe passage. We just want you out.
Terra
Prime don't
want to
hurt you.
Dedicated to life in all diversity. And it's like, dude, you're just pushing the right buttons. Like you're being unreasonable, but you're not being visibly evil to the general public here. And yeah, just maybe that's his true agenda. I don't know. You know, there's concerns that the president and Archer have that, you know, this guy is going to escalate things and it's going to get worse and worse. But the president, Tam Elbrum, who is former Terra Prime, says, no, you know, Paxton's a nut or whatever, but he is a man of his word. I don't think we have to worry about him shooting early or anything else. And also it's a
says that like he knows him. I mean, it was a nice way that they kind of snuck that in of like, there's nothing on screen that tells you that, but he's very sure of it.
Which also continues to support like my suspicion to the end that Tam Elbrum was part of the Terra Prime still. But, you know, Paxton knows that this is also a PR war, and there's only so far you can go with your terrorist actions before you're going to risk losing any support you have on the surface of Earth. And that's why I like that his threat is that if the aliens aren't gone, I'm nuking Starfleet headquarters from space because they're the ones that got us into this. Like my grievance is with aliens on Earth by way of Starfleet deciding that they are going to be at the helm of humanity.
Things don't go super well for Space President Tam Elbrum while he's at the Holiday Inn Express having his conference trying to start the Federation. The Andorians are a little concerned about the level of profanity being used outside their embassy. Seems to be a few insurrectionists that might have red hats on that have shown up at different embassies for different alien species. And the political situation is becoming a bit difficult. Meanwhile, on Enterprise, they're trying everything they can to kind of beat what's happening here. They're going to try and beam them out. Can't. Going to try and make a run at the Verderon Array itself, and they get basically a brushback pitch from the Verderon Array, like Paxton telling them to buzz off. Essentially, confining them to a set of choices that are going to be difficult for Archer to navigate.
Back before we leave the conference, you got the Andorians. So, you know, maybe humanity isn't ready. What are we still doing here? Blah, blah, blah. And I think Suval kind of holds his tongue because Suval's ride or die human at this point. But it's like, listen, we just spent the past like 8 episodes going around the Alpha Quadrant while we fix everybody else's problems as their own governments lie and try to cause wars and all of the other shit the Romulans did. Like, how about you cut us like 2 hours worth of slack, motherfuckers? Listen,
I know we've got some people who are a little angry right now with you all because they were Space 9/11 not too long ago and they're a little sad about it.
Maybe we didn't say sorry, thinking back on that, you know, oops, our bad. So but we did just save the galaxy from space goo sphere builders. And we did just avert like 4 different wars.
So, you know, why don't you just chill out for a second? Let me work it out. Right? Let me work the problem a little bit. So you can calm everyone down. We can go back
in time and fight aliens from the fifth dimension and win and save everything for the galaxy. I think we can do a little PR work and get some people. Yeah,
you're into the sphere builders? No? It's because we fucking got rid of them. We did that. Daddy Earth. Daddy Earth squared that away for you.
Remember we flew between you guys when you're going to go to like war with each other because the Romulans were pulling the strings? How about you chill out that people are using 4-letter words on you over the wall of your embassy?
Yeah, remember when we did that and then did that a second time and then did that a third time in a row?
So,
calm down.
The Enterprise represents Starfleet. And in fact, it's Jonathan Archer who specifically Paxton should have the most beef with because it has been Archer without communication to Earth making decisions that impact Earth.
All of this is Archer's fault, quite literally.
Here's the downfall of this episode. And it's hard to ignore moving forward, is that Archer should be enemy number one to Paxton. If he's talking about zapping an occupied Starfleet command, you know, he's willing to kill human Starfleet personnel, then he should want to kill John Archer. And he
isn't even really willing to kill Starfleet personnel. He even said, like, I understand that all the Starfleet command is going to be empty.
Well, no.
Evacuated all the buildings. I'm not killing anybody.
That's two separate things. He has the stipulation up front. You will vacate or I'm going to shoot. And then later on, he says, okay, regardless of what happens, I'm still destroying Starfleet headquarters, but I'm going to do it at this time and date. So I think that's two separate repercussions, right?
Well, no, he's already told them if you're not going to comply, you should probably be out of there in 24 hours because I am going to blow it up. I mean, that's clear enough, right? Like, be there at your own peril. Mm-hmm. I'm making the threat. And it's part of him being a reasonable evil villain, right? Like, I am being very clear with my intentions, and I'm going to follow through on the things I'm saying. So if you decide to stand in the way of my bullet, that is on you. That is your choice.
Yeah, but listen, man, you don't point a gun at people unless you're ready to kill. And whether or not you tell people,
which he is, because he's evil.
Hey, but get ready and whatever. Like, still, he has a capacity for murder. As he has killed plenty of his own people up to this point. He shot crazy hair lady, and he killed I forget what the doctor, what we were calling him, but
the guy from Black Dahlia, yeah.
He's killed plenty of people up to this point and probably a lot of people prior to that. Okay, maybe he's announced when he's going to shoot Starfleet. So again, he doesn't look as much of a villain to the community. But he's still willing to kill. Archer is the bad guy. Archer also has effectively the only ship that can really cause problems. Archer has brought all these issues in. Archer represents the entirety of the effort to unite Earth with whatever, blah, 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 blah. But it's a TV show. He can't just be an effective villain that just goes, okay, there's fucking Enterprise. They're buzzing around causing problems. Blow these motherfuckers up. That's a military ship. I don't have to worry about civilians or reporters or intergalactic war because we killed the Andorian ambassadors. Kill Archer. Show people I'm for real serious. So this 2%, like, hey, shoo away.
Or at least that needed to be an explanation to say, you know, Archer saved humanity from the Zindi, so I have to afford him the opportunity to retreat as a courtesy.
Or he could, yeah, I can't, boss, why don't we just blow him up? Because he just saved us from the Zindi, and if I kill this guy that's still on the box of every Wheaties on the shelves, then we're going to lose the hearts and minds. And
yeah,
and
yeah, it's like a political real talk. Like the hero that everyone named their high schools after, that's who I should kill.
Yeah.
Like that. That's a great way to win political support. And then it would have paid off then when we had their confrontation. If like Archer knew that he kind of got the brushback pitch because Paxton gave him a pass, like that was communicated in some way. Mm-hmm. And then he follows it up to say like, yeah, I gave you a pass, but it's still your fault that they attacked. And he's like wondering like, why, how can you blame me for the Zindi attacking, to say, didn't the Zindi try to destroy us because in the future we create a giant interstellar federation that they thought was going to exterminate them? Isn't this all your fault? You're making that future happen.
You could say, well, how would he know that? But this dude's got spies all over Starfleet. So yeah.
I mean, it would have been nice to hear, like, in the end, you're fulfilling your destiny that you think you need to build this thing. So yeah, of course the fact the fucking Zindi show up was your fault.
I mean, we've rewritten a lot of stuff, but I mean, that's rock solid script doctoring there.
And it finally makes the temporal Cold War matter to the fucking plot of the show.
Yeah.
Like, no. You're not only exposing Earth to risk now, you're exposing Earth to risk forever.
God, what if somehow he had Zindi from Detroit, and just, you know, the reptilians live forever and he's just had this guy.
Or that's what radicalizes him to act. He gets the record from Starfleet, from his spy, and he realizes this is going to go on for centuries and the Earth is never going to be secure because it's decided to go down this road. And so he's going to make a change in the timeline to try and stop it from happening.
Maybe some shit happened and like the outlook started being pretty rosy and Terra Prime started losing its footing and he started easing off like, well, maybe things are for the better. Maybe I was wrong. Oh, what's this report? What? Yeah. Huh?
Ugh. Okay. Hate to say I could improve it, but I think we did.
There's a couple points where it can be improved. Another one is, they fall back and they got to, you know, they get the 2%, half the ship gets like bedazzled or whatever, and they step off back to Earth to lick their wounds and try and regroup. Meanwhile, you got Trip and T'Pol back on there. But I want to cut to the point where they start trying to hatch a plan of how are they going to get close to Mars without them seeing and gunning them down out of orbit. And they're pitching this plan to Tam Elbrum. It's like Reed, Mayweather, and Archer. And their idea is like, you know, we got to get close, but we got these problems. And if he can't see us, then he can't destroy us. So we got to find a way to sneak up there because the fate of humanity is in the balance. How are we going to do it? And I'm like, fuck yeah, man. They're over here alluding like, if he can't see us, he can't destroy us. It's so important. It's Manny Koto. He's watched all the episodes. Oh boy, I start rubbing my hands. I'm like, it took them right here to the end, but finally we're going to get that Suluban cell ship out. What a great time to break that cloaking device out. You can fly up there. Maybe a crash lands and that you lose the technology and just, you know, what the perfect time to pull that cherry out and put it on the fucking lip. No, we're going to hide behind a fucking asteroid and fly the ship and then shoot a shuttle pod out. I'm like, I know there's a cell ship on there. Tie this fucking plot thread up, please. This is the perfect time. No, we're going to fly behind a comet that just so happens to be on a crash course with Mars.
You got to justify Mayweather being on that ship. Okay, like we've got things we got to do.
The fucking Suluban ship. It's the same thing. He's a great pilot. He's going to fly.
Okay, fair enough.
Because yeah, Trip's not there. Trip flew it last time. Ask Manny Koto. Put on the list to ask him what the Ouija board.
I will.
Do you really know what the Ouija board is?
Like, we got so many fucking questions.
Well, it's not like he's got anything better to do.
That's true. He's probably like tapping his foot, like, get around to it, boys. Like, trying to haunt you. Meanwhile, on the Paxton's ship, he finally allows Trip and Paul to see their daughter. Okay. By the way, the stunt baby for this episode is an adorable stunt baby. Just precious. And got the little Vulcan ears. It's very, very cute. So Paul basically spends the entire episode with the baby, and Trip is forced at gunpoint to Paul's head to assist Paxton in trying to improve the targeting array.
Another great line goes, I want you to help me, and you're going to give me a better gun. And then Trip's like, you really think I'm going to help you? And then RoboCop's like, you think I'm going to give you a choice? And then Big Bad's got a gun on his girl's head, and it's like, that's how you do business.
Exactly. Like, matter of fact, like, let's not play. Like, of course you're going to, because you're a man of dignity and character. You're also not going to let her die. Come on. I know you.
Can I just say thank you, Manny Cotto, or whoever, for having the civilian villain not be in stupid space clothes. RoboCop's just wearing a fucking regular suit
the whole time. Yeah.
Off the rack suit. No combat boots, no jumpsuit. No fucking purple gel with bent coat hanger Zindi bullshit. That's where his true power comes from, is the fact he's not dressed like a fool. No Vlad glow blooming here.
No, sir. Not even a little. So we do hear from Space President Tana Milbrum that the kill mission on the Verdron array, which will apparently blow up half of one of the colonies, Utopia Planitia colony, is a go as plan B. So they're very serious about this. And Archer's backup plan of hitching a ride on a comet to get close to the surface with a shuttlecraft so that they can try and pull an infiltration keeper is, you know, the threat is, if that doesn't work, we're just going to blow it up. It's that serious. And this is, of course, a climax where everyone's going to have a role. Trip and T'Pol are busy with the plot with Paxton, but you've got to have Archer and Mayweather and Reed and even Phlox for no reason to go on this away team. Because we also have to have something for Hoshi to do. And Hoshi, for the only time in all of Star Trek Enterprise, is left in command of the NX-01.
Oh, NX-01, yes. She did get to be in charge of the Defiant in another game.
That's true. Mirror Hoshi, different story. But actual Hoshi, like real Hoshi, like the actual character we've been watching, this is it. She is it. Her hero's journey ends in I think, a very appropriate way from where she started, which is you've gone from the person who very nearly at the very beginning of this journey wanted to transfer off because you couldn't hack being in space to, I trust you enough that I'm going to give you command of the ship in the one of the most trying circumstances that we have ever faced because I know you'll make the right calls. Perfect.
So, for those of you counting at home, at this point, Hoshi has one time been in command of the ship, one time fallen out of a hole in the roof and her shirt come off.
It's correct.
One time gone down to negotiate with an alien telepath while in a cocktail dress.
Also, yes.
And also got stuck in transporter hell, so... You know, they don't bring her out often, but it's usually a potent display when she does get her occasional plot bump.
And sometimes she goes crazy from, like, the flu. Sometimes she finds out what Reed's favorite food is while the ship is nearly being blown up.
In all reality, she's had some, and it's because they don't really use her when they do bring her out in flattering light. It's strong. And I would say this is a good look for her. Her most heroic, though, there's no way to top.
Oh, the brain worms,
fighting
obviously.
The Zindi brain parasites. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like when she's having her conflict with President Tan Elbrum, it's like, I just wanted her to say, like, I've literally been tortured to the point of death to try and get me to destroy Earth. I trust me. I know how to handle stressful situations. I got it. Take a fucking seat. All right. I'm a professional.
I saved Earth already one time. Fuck off, Tam. You're not my boss.
Some dudes you've never seen. We're so much better at this than anyone else you have. You can just chill, all right?
So there is a scene along the way where RoboCop comes in and talks to Paul while she is bonding with her baby, which they will later name Elizabeth, which I saw that coming a long way. Twist ending on the end of this, though, that I was expecting.
Yeah, like, and they leave it there, too. It'll leave you with the sadness, which I thought was very effective.
But it's a good scene because she's like, first of all, how? And he discloses that they've got Terra Firma's got, or sorry, yeah, Terra Firma's Mass Effect. Terra Prime's got operatives on Enterprise, which confirms the mole suspicions, or at least that there's more moles. You don't know who to trust, and that they took bile samples and made the baby. My question is why? Like, this whole baby thing is kind of a big plot hole for me. Like, it's cool motivation and they do fun stuff with it, but it doesn't really seem to serve any purpose other than making Terra Prime look bad on that broadcast. Cause when like their big reveal is like, we must avoid this future, and they pull it back and it's like,
here's an adorable baby with knife ears.
It's a little just happy baby laying there being chill. And it's like, who's going to see this and be like, fuck. Like if the baby had like six arms, or like sludge coming out of it, or was like rolling around in blood.
This is where the Trek sort of idealism doesn't make, you know, survive first contact with the enemy, because what they're trying to do is portray like blood and soil nationalism and true racism, and that's Paxton's position is equivalent to that, because it also seems absurd. Like, why would a rational person think that and say that and do that? And in that way, they're trying to recreate that experience by having Paxton be, you know, essentially a Hitler-like figure who is equating the delusion of the human genome with this foreign Vulcan DNA as that kind of sin, right? And that is motivational for him. The problem with that is that's so irrational and not portrayed in a way that could provide a window for someone to connect as to why this is happening, because they don't want to give it any kind of credibility because it is a terrible idea, that it comes off as the only cartoonish thing he's doing. It's like, why would you create an adorable baby that everyone would love? That seems like a terrible, evil plan. Yes, it does. But we're supposed to think that Paxton's the kind of Hitler-like figure who's appealing to people who look at this the same way of an Aryan having a child with a Jew would have looked at it in 1937. And it doesn't translate to people in 2005 or 2024.
If they had to keep the baby there and the baby had to be a threat to humanity the way he presents it, there needed to be a dialogue from him that says, you know, we've been deceived as a planet, as a species. Starfleet's done all this stuff in space, blah, blah, blah. We have been told lies. You know, they're getting us, people trying to kill us. And then, you know, the big lie is that, you know, we are all separate, that we cannot interbreed, that we will always be humanity. And here is the reality. Here is a human Vulcan baby. This is deception by Starfleet and the government. And the reality is that our uniqueness is not guaranteed. And as this community, this galactic community continues to come in, humans will be bred out, that we are an extinct species waiting to happen, that we are being invaded. And then it's like, okay, you're exposing a quote unquote lie, even if you manufactured this thing, but like, you're the bad guy. You're making
it more of an immediate threat than a hypothetical one, even if it is, you know, like far-fetched. Right,
but there's a deception and I'm pulling the curtain back, and now here's a shock value. This baby represents proof you've been lied to, not just, hey, here's a baby. Look at this.
Look at this baby. Isn't it a vile baby?
Yeah.
Agreed. And even that's like thin enough to be very easily villainous without it being like ludicrous, right? But it is what it is. But before we leave the first act, we have to memorialize that we return to Gotham City. We have another visit to the Gotham City pier by Reed, so that they can kind of like figure out what to do here and speak again with Harris. And okay, great. You know, I kind of like conclude that plot line by having Harris actually be helpful for a change and just here, use this, find a way to get there. Good luck. By the way, like, we're going to deal with each other in the future.
Hey, you know what would have been really great at that point is if Harris would have been like, hey, I hear you guys are planning a crazy mission, but we really want to be part of the intergalactic community and Terra Prime is super bad for Section 31 business. I'm going to hook you up with the little ship that can cloak. I know you've been wondering what happened to that cell ship. And then Reed could be like, yeah, what did happen? And they're like, we got it. And we were going to take it apart. But this is so important that we're going to give it to you guys because you're going to need to go save the day. And that's why this crazy cloaking hyper warp technology vessel is never spoken of again, is because we didn't have enough chance to study it and you destroyed in the mission. And that's that. But hey, whatever. Yeah, it's still a good mission, or it's still a good meeting back in Gotham City. Again, Reed, not terrible. It was a good way to wrap their little plot line up. Yeah. Also, speaking of characters that barely matter, Mayweather gets a call to go visit his girlfriend down in the Pokey. I want to say, this is the first time we've seen a brig in Star Trek Enterprise where you don't have an energy field. And I always used to think like, man, you know, the energy fields are kind of silly because if the power goes out, the energy field goes down, or like Rogue Dinar can just force his way through or whatever. I understand now why you don't want the doors. When he opens the door to go in there and talk to her and then he leaves and she like tries to go like, Travis, no, and that door slams shut. I was like, oh my God, that's going to cut her fingers off. These are terrible doors. Like, what do you do if the door slam and shut and someone's got their hand there? Like,
shouldn't that's why you need the prison door. It's a nice reminder.
I guess. She's got something to tell him, though. And he is the only one that she can trust. Hey, I'm not actually a spy for Terra Prime. I am a member of Starfleet Intelligence. And I'm here looking for the Terra Prime spy. Which I was accomplishing by fucking you for like 2 days straight or whatever that was.
Going into the shuttlecraft in which you penetrated things.
I was looking for the spy somewhere in your crotch region. That's how important my mission is. And he's like, no.
I find spies so much better when I've been freshly fucked.
When I've been laying in bed, seriously, for like 10 hours, because there's like three big staff meetings and they hatch the whole plan to send off Trip and T'Pol. That terrible plan. There's a lot of bad plot points in this two-part.
Like, it's a ship where I, as an attractive woman, show up and I feel the need to take my clothes off. I don't know what the hell is going on here. There's that lingering effect of the Orions or something.
Could be that, too. But hey, I'm really Starfleet secure. And he's like, well, you know, we can call that and clear your name. And she's like, no, but then the mole would know. And some pretty decent, like, spy talk there. But she tells him.
Yeah, mostly, hey, keep watch your back, right? Like, is the intention here. Like, someone is out to get you, and it's not me, and you need to know that.
It's at this point that he rejects her, and he goes, you know what? I'm tired of being a good actor in my element. I'm going to go back into space military pilot mode, which I don't understand at all. And then we go back into the Travis Mayweather, who was so bad that he was not allowed to be on camera anymore, as he pilots the suicide mission. And I want to go out of order here a little bit and just stay on this plot line. Your girlfriend, who at the worst is an enemy spy, and at the best is on your side and telling you that there are more spies native on the ship, which we know is the truth now because RoboCop said, I got your DNA samples off the sick bay computer or whatever.
Yeah, right? The audience knows Gannett is telling some level of truth.
You're about to go as Travis Mayweather on a very dangerous, I dare call it a suicide mission, Mass Effect style, where you're going to fly from behind a comet in your little rinky-dink Cracker Jack tin can shuttle pod and fly and try to get down to the surface of Mars and then infiltrate a facility. Blah, 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 blah. A million things can go wrong. And you're telling me at no point you don't pull Archer off to the side and say, hey, listen, man, I don't believe her and I think this is just fucking crazy. But so you know, she says.
We call that CYA with the boss, by the way.
Because let me tell you what. You know, we made the joke on fucking Wrath of Khan and Space Seed that McCoy let Khan choke him and talk about killing him and hold him at knife point and not tell Kirk anything about that. Same deal here. Like, hey, we're about to try and sneak into the bad guy's base. She's saying that we've got more moles here and that he's probably going to know and just like shoot us out of the sky. Just so you know.
Yeah, just do that whatever you want. I just want to make sure I convey that to you. I don't like my job here.
I don't want it on my conscience just in case she's telling the truth. Instead, he's just like, not only am I not going to say anything, I'm going to completely forget about it to the point where they get back up to the ship. He's trying to figure out, like, how did our ship just completely seize up like someone sabotaged it? What's this open panel?
It's like, what's this? Sabotage? What could have possibly have happened here?
Oh, God. It's like watching my daughters try to figure out thermodynamics or something. Like, dude, go borrow a jump to conclusion, Matt, man. I can't with you.
On Paxton's ship, Trip taunts the dragon and tries to punch him, and then he gets his ass royally kicked by a man twice his fucking size. There's no contest.
I was so off on this scene. Let me frame the scene, because this is how wrong I was. As wrong as I was thinking they're going to bring out the Suluban cell ship with a cloak after talking about slipping in on this. There's a guy, the mean tall guard standing over Trip. Trip is down on one knee, digging around in a glory hole full of spaghetti cords. He's got a space pipe in his hand, like,
oh yeah,
working it. And I'm just like, oh man, we're back to Khan Aramar. Is he going to look at the camera and give us a smile and like grab a huge wrench and then knock this dude the fuck out? It's been 2 episodes since I've seen Trip bust someone upside the head with a space pipe. Please, please. I can't wait to see what happens. Denied.
Instead, he just gives him a Shoryuken, which was a pretty effective punch. Knocked him down. But this dude just gets up pissed. He's just angry. He's going to have to exert effort. And promptly rolls Trip like it's no problem. Puts him on the ground. So much so that like RoboCop shows up and like pours him a drink. We're like, sorry to hear that happen to you. Like, seems like that was terrible.
Good luck, Ribs. So here's the angle RoboCop plays against Trip. I know you don't want to build the weapon or make my space laser better. And in fact, I was betting on you fucking it up more, which you've done. And now I want you to fix it. Because here's the deal. I am going to shoot Starfleet Command. That's going to happen. I would like for this to be a precision operation. What you've done is fucked up the targeting sensor. So now, who knows what I'm going to shoot? Who knows how many times I'm going to have to shoot to get Starfleet Command? Who knows how many innocent bystanders are going to get fucking zapped because you're not playing ball? Not only am I willing to kill your wife if you don't do what I tell you to do, but I'm going to have other blood on your hands. And the genius, and I don't know if it's intentional because I don't really call attention to it specifically, but Trip, whose guiding character motivation since the beginning of season 3 has been that my family was just annihilated by a giant space laser carving up Florida. And now you're putting me in a position where a giant space laser is going to kill more people, and this time it's going to be my fault. Like, what a perfect villain dick move.
Now, I wish there was a bit of touching it to reinforce it, but you're absolutely right. That is an amazing villain dick move. Like, you hate space lasers that carve up the planet. Well, let me tell you what you're about to be responsible for, my pedigree chum.
My mole tells
me. San Francisco, and it's going to be your fucking fault.
My moles tell me you've got a real problem with people dying because of space lasers. What if I told you?
So,
yo, dog, I heard you hate space lasers.
Oh, and meanwhile, T'Pol has like a "Hello, I am your mother" conversation with her baby, and I just super endearing. You know, she's trying to process this child being hers in a way that's reflective of the limited emotions she's able to portray, but she portrays them well. But she is concerned with the medical scans that she is getting, and that will come into play here in a little bit.
Oh, also, after Trip gets his ass kicked and RoboCop tells him what's up, he goes, "Fine, you don't want to play ball with me. You're going to go in a holding cell. Make sure you guys put him in one with a TV so he can watch his space laser kill innocent people, and that'll be his punishment." To which Trip's like, "Ah, you fool, you've left me alone. I'm now going to reveal my alter ego of MacGyver as I build a door hack kit out of my belt buckle."
It was even like MacGyver music in the background.
It was jarring.
It was. It was like a big shift. Like, where's this, all this like deep 80s synth coming from suddenly?
Wait, hold on. Has Trip always had a mullet?
So while he is doing that, Mayweather is trying to get them onto the planet surface. Sure enough, suddenly the shuttlecraft has a bit of an oopsie doodle, and he's got to try and pilot it manually while Reed fills air sickness bags behind him, unable to handle the turbulence. Nice little continuity there. I like that.
What actually happened there is Travis's acting was so bad it broke the shuttle.
Makes sense. Or was making Reed vomit. But he does, of course, succeed, although the shuttle does have a lot of nasty hull damage from the reentry being much faster than it should have, which I thought was a nice detail. And they managed to essentially land where they intended.
So in this scene, we are told that the terraforming efforts on Mars have made the surface habitable. It's cold. You got to wear warm coats, but you don't need EV suits.
You do need oxygen, too. It's thin.
So my question is, did they just already auction off the EV suits and like they don't have those available, or did they bring too many people? Because they've got, what, 4 EV suits?
They have 4 EV suits. I think that they didn't want to do EV suits because this is a neat kind of option to go with, to say Mars is being terraformed. It's an ongoing process to add atmosphere, right? Like, that's why these comets are being directed to impact the polar regions. So it just builds more gases in the atmosphere that can help.
Is that what all this is?
Yeah. So this is an interesting like theory about how you would terraform a planet that, like, you know, physicists and space, you know, nerds and NASA people think of, like, okay, how would you do it, right? What's the thing that holds Mars back from being able to retain life? Well, it's the fact that it has an extraordinarily thin atmosphere, and its thin atmosphere means that it's very cold, and there's lots of exposure to radiation. And that's the real reason why nothing can live there. So if you wanted Mars to be habitable, what would you have to do? Well, you'd have to
thicken the atmosphere. You get Weyland-Yutani to put a terraforming station on there. And just
obviously.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would say. But yeah, nuking it from orbit with asteroids. So that's why the space laser was there.
Correct.
So it's a space laser and also a tractor beam. So it's grabbing.
It's like a pull cue. You hit it at an angle and have it start careening the direction you want it to careen.
I thought that was a array to shoot asteroids away that were going to hit Earth. And maybe that's a dual function.
I mean, probably can do that too.
I mean, if you can shoot a fucking laser at the moon, it should be able to intercept. You know, that would have been a great thing to shoot the Zindi Death Star, now that I think about it.
Like, where was this?
I'm sorry. The what array on where? After the Zindi just blew up a outpost Arbuckle or whatever that fucking station was. Like, you guys have had a Death Star mounted on Mars for zapping away. Okay.
But yeah, that's what this is about, is the idea of Mars being halfway through this theoretical terraforming process where a bunch of comets hit the polar regions. The subsequent deployment of all of the debris and gas from that was what helped build Earth's atmosphere, or so we theorize hundreds of millions of years ago. So we'll just keep doing that over and over again until there's more substance in the atmosphere and we can use technology to process more oxygen within that. Then we'll build a layer of protection, both for, you know, temperature reasons and also habitation reasons. And so this has been going on for a century. So they've made some progress, but it's taken a while. So still need oxygen. Can't survive out there.
So by the time TNG rolls around, is Mars fully habitable then?
Yes. And we see that actually in Picard, if briefly, at Utopia Planitia on the surface of Mars. There's no EV suits anywhere. There's no...
Well, it was all indoor scenes that you saw, so...
But there's outdoor establishing shots, some people working.
I'm sorry, I really tried to block all that.
That was the only part I cared about because it showed Utopia Planitia. So I like that. I like that kind of like specific spot they winded up with, like the Mars continuity, and they infiltrate the ship.
So meanwhile, T'Pol has scanned RoboCop while his back was. He came in to be like, fuck your baby and fuck you. And she's like, what's your problem here? And, you know, he makes his case. She scans him. And then she says, I want a private meeting with him. And he's like, all right, we're going to be in a room together alone. Keep in mind, I know you're a Vulcan and have like the strength of three chimpanzees or whatever. She's alone with him. She grabs him by the wrist and turns his hands up. I'm like, oh man, is she about to put him in some UFC jujitsu here? And like, you know, are we going to see Professor Disco's valiant return? Because I watched her kick the shit out of like three Klingons on Space Texan oil derrick planet. And instead she's just like, you got the Rigelian shakes. You're a fraud. And she lets him go. And I was like, pull him across a table, pop him on the neck and like under siege this shit. What are you doing, T'Pol?
They're too focused on trying to make sure they let the audience know that Paxton is not a true Aryan. You know, like that's the joke, right? Like that's what they're really not a joke. That's actually the point, which is sure. these villains in history that Paxton is supposed to be assimilating are very well known for not essentially following the strict, rigid racial hierarchies that they held up as the most pure. And so this is the story making the same point here about Paxton. He has a rare disease. It can only be treated with Rigelian gene therapy. So in the end, he is a total hypocrite for being willing to embrace an alien cure to his disease rather than perish with his honor intact. And you don't do anything with that aside from just have Paxton be confronted. But I get why they do it, right? Like, got to make sure that the audience knows this dude sucks.
Have Paxton get grabbed by a person that should have been able to whip him to and fro like the Hulk and smash his head on everything. He's like, get the fuck out of here. I'm done with you. Go back to your baby. And she's like, okay, fine. Also, he is sick. And he's like, well, that's your problem. Off you go.
Meanwhile, Samuels is starting to have his fight with Hoshi on the bridge. Hoshi is, you know, standing firm on fulfilling this mission under the most, you know, stringent timeline possible. She doesn't want to have to blow up the Verderon array and kill a bunch of people and kill her, you know, ex-boyfriend and all of her friends. So she's telling Tam Elbrum to fuck off. And holds her ground very well, up to and including telling him he's not allowed to radio Admiral Gardner.
You're not my boss, and you can't talk. You know what? I am the manager. That's what that move's called right there.
It was. Like,
call your manager. I am the manager. What's she going to be, though? Like, listen, Tam, I don't really know how to tell it to you, but, like, there's a weird thing on Enterprise where, like, we always pull it off, like, last minute, and it's not really last minute yet, so just chill out. You'll see. Trust me, bro.
She says it like no hesitation. Like, oh, no, it's going to take two more minutes to arm. I've got to give him at least 90 seconds. Like, that just wouldn't be courteous.
But it's 2 minutes. That's too close. Listen, let me tell you about the Zindi War, okay? Like, it's all a matter of nanoseconds. We're working in Android time here.
The Mass Effect team finally gets on the ship, right?
Which I'd like to go ahead and point out here. You brought Phlox and Mayweather and Reed and Arch. No Makos.
Not a one. No room for them.
I know that shuttle's small, but you're telling me people, if I'm going into like hostile Aryan Brotherhood territory or whatever, like I would be willing to sit on a Mako's lap. Like just this is a
couple extra guys.
This is an Earth oh fuck conflict. I can't think of anybody better to be in that shuttlecraft than like elite Earth commandos.
Bring me Mr. Business.
Oh yeah.
Bring me the guy from Hawaii 5-0. Bring me the Israeli hottie. I want the all-stars.
I'm going to tell you what. Go figure out those standard Federation resuscitation protocols. I want Zombie Hayes on this team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, bring him back. Just like he comes out of the tunnel with the steel chair. Mm-hmm. Just like the Undertaker. He just never stays gone. They get onto the ship. To the very last episode, Reed still does not know how to hold a gun and in fact, his weird fencing flourish with it is kind of what leads him to not shoot Trip when he's walking down the hall. And they eventually get the team together and they're going to go to the nerve center and confront Paxton.
Back to Paxton being sick. The mislead there, the more we talk about this, the more writing, like the big picture is great in this. The details, I think there's a lot of misses. The Rigelian plague is bad. Make whatever his sickness is, the cure is coming from their kid, and that he cloned the baby to cure his own thing, because then he's the ultimate hypocrite. This future you're afraid of is what you're sustaining yourself on. You're stealing from my baby to give yourself life.
I feel like that's just too much, though. That would be too on the nose. The fact that he has a disability and he's hiding it because he's devoted to this particular worldview.
Yeah, but there's got to be a reason for the kid. And there's not a good reason for the kid unless you do it the other way.
That's just it. There's never going to be a good reason that you and I are going to get for the kid, because what they're trying to portray is something that we won't get.
Again, I think if they having him feast off it like a vampire could have done it. I think the first way we wrote it where, hey, Earth lied, like we can crossbreed and this is the conspiracy there.
That would be better. Yeah.
Or, and I think the real hotness here, her scan on him and his dark secret revealing that this dude's an augment.
Ooh. Ooh, that would have been better.
You're over here talking all this shit about human purity. You're a fake. You're illegal as fuck. People like you dragged us into World War III. You know, maybe there'd be a good fight sequence there. We could like Terminator throw Archer around a little bit, which, you know, there's something to be said about the bad guy hiding under a desk and not really being confrontational. But like him being a secret augment would have been like, or even like a fucked up augment that didn't
kind of like say like a partial augment or like
Shirk or whatever his name was.
Or experiments that like Terra Prime had been conducting.
Yeah.
And that's why they had the idea of cloning the kid in the first place. There's a whole direction you could have gone that would have linked back into the augment stuff in a way that was compelling. You're absolutely right.
And that would have been amazing too, because all the augment stuff was fucking terrific the whole way through, right back to the fucking Klingons getting involved with this shit. They storm the command center. Everybody seems to forget that phasers have a phase stun setting. So they take command and they've got everybody at bay. You now have like super duper terrorists that are second place only to the Zindi in terms of atrocity potential with space lasers.
And you don't just stun them. Yeah. you just don't stun them, right? That's like bang, bang. We'll deal with you later.
Okay. You're the new space Osama bin Laden. And you're his number one disposable goon. Zap, zap. Let's go deprogram everything. No, just we're going to hold you at gunpoint and then run. And they gun down Reed and Trip.
Yeah, one last shitty gunfight, right? I have one more. Right? Like, it wouldn't be Enterprise. We have one more shitty fucking gunfight. Slam. Yeah, with RoboCop like soloing like main characters, right?
Oh, man, if his leg would have opened. That's the other thing he could have gone for.
He's actually holding his gun correctly. You know, like, that's why Reed has to be shot first. He's just offended by the way he holds it.
Jump back to the Maloran. And Voyager. Way back.
Damn.
Well, I mean, that's the closest you're going to get to, like, scummy minor people, right?
Yeah.
I thought that if Paxton was like kind of cyborgy, right? Like some sort of implants. And I've been playing a lot of cyberpunk, so I've been seeing a lot of implants, but like that would have been a neat secret, like along the same lines as augments. Like you're talking about human purity, like, you know, you've got all this Borg shit in you or whatever.
Yeah,
like
you could have made Pax into a character that had some sort of cybernetically enhanced body, maybe a cybernetically enhanced brain programmed with certain information of things he had to do, maybe prime things, maybe directives, thing perhaps.
With all these miners on the moon, is that, you know, there's a lot of cybernetic enhancements. And that would have been cool too, like the humanity you never see. There's no minus visors. And right at the end of TNG, Geordi finally gets those implant eyes. But you don't see cyborgs until Lower Decks. What's his face has that panel on the side of his head.
And then, like one weird Discovery character no one ever talked about.
Yeah. That fucking thing. But hey, you know, there was a big fad for a while with humans cyborging out, and it was really big at the off-world colonies where there was a lot of like danger and labor, and like as humanity refined itself,
a minor, right? Like there's a window to like, here's a part of human society you've never seen before.
Right. And as humanity refined itself, like this this mechanical augmentation offshoot, like when I
okay, hold on.
Here, let me go and do it for you.
You just hit something that they didn't do that they should have done so bad and was perfectly set up for, and they don't touch it. This should have been the working class people of Earth opposing specifically these people that want to go travel the stars. It's like, what are you doing to us? We're the miners. We're the people who are working to make this whole society function. And you're out there wild and out, meeting new species, inviting them over and exposing us to danger. What if we stop doing things for the society the way we are now? What if instead nothing worked? You know, like some sort of working class versus professional class element to this would have worked so much better than stupid space racism.
And that's what it started off with in episode one. Trip goes to the recruitment rally, and the other guy, I can't remember his name.
Josiah
had a real solid sales pitch, which was exactly that. We're trying to provide for our families and we're trying to do our thing. And you've got people in San Francisco just and in space causing all sorts of headaches and getting us fucking killed. Like we're just trying to enjoy post World War III, this nice world we're making for ourselves. And you guys are dragging us into shit we are not ready for. Anyways, if we went with that Borg angle, yeah, his leg totally could have opened up and he could pull the gun out and that would have been dope.
So eventually, for some reason, Paxton
approaches. Oh, real quick. So the Starfleet forgets they have phasers that can stun, but the evil Terra Prime guys, all of their guns can only stun. Those are the guns that I would have expected to be set on kill, but instead, Reed and
Trip both get shot.
Their plot armor, it's just too thick, man. Those EM pistols can't cut through. That's why they had to move over to the phase pistols.
It was the real reason. We found main characters cannot be slain. In the stupidest monologuing choice I've ever seen in my life in an episode of television that I have personally watched, after Space RoboCop doesn't have a gun, and there's like this fracture in the window to the outside that's growing worse and worse, and clearly, Paxton is waiting for his opportunity to act after that breaks. Archer turns his back to that and like starts talking to Paxton like he's the shit. And he's going to bring him down. And like Paxton's just sitting there like with this glee on his face, just waiting for his moment. Like, I can't wait. I can't believe he's this stupid. He's going to sit there and talk to me until this window breaks and I'm going to get my shot at him.
Is loudly cracking behind him.
Yeah.
This event horizon window. Again, he could have just stunned him and been done with it, but, you know, TV show. And again, the genius of Wrath of Khan was just keeping these people apart. So we're fighting, our ships are fighting, we got an open comm channel. all the time in the world or all the time in this combat to just yell and talk and monologue without this thing happening right now that's happening. The window blows out. This mining vessel with a shutter that goes down over that window does not deploy the shutter down over the window and instead lets itself depressurize. RoboCop's like, my lungs are used to working in depressurized rooms, which I buy. Sure.
Yeah. This is like, I'm used to thin air. So he's trying to get the thing launched. He succeeds, but you know what? Trip was successful in making the targeting ray not work and shoots harmlessly into San Francisco Bay. And the day is saved.
God, what if it hit Bay Stadium though?
Oh, what a tragedy. No, at least we would only have had pictures to remember.
At terrible least pictures. $45 in set damages lost forever.
So we actually do get a whole extra act before this episode's over. So like the action's over at like 31 minutes.
I was so surprised that Peter Weller did not get sucked out into space.
It seemed like it was going to go total. What's that movie? Total Recall. Event
Horizon, Total Recall. I mean, you name it. This is the first and probably only time in TV cinema history where the bad guy was around a window going out into space and does not get sucked out to a gruesome death.
Yeah, he just gets put in the pokey. So Paul knows that Elizabeth, whom they name in this next scene, is not doing well. And Phlox comes in and gives them bad news, which is the method by which she was cloned is flawed. And because of that, it doesn't appear that Vulcan and human DNA is compatible sufficient for her to live. And I'm trying, but literally no one like her has ever existed. There's no book on this. I don't know if I can do anything. So Phlox's last part of the story here in being that he's desperately trying to find a way to save Elizabeth and then ultimately fails and feels tremendous remorse and reveals to the captain actually that, you know, he's come to see the crew of the Enterprise as a family, that he's feeling the loss of Elizabeth if it was her, his own daughter. Great way for his character to end. He was somebody who struggled to make emotional connections with people on the ship, despite having such a big personality, and has come to have an almost human-like sentimental attachment to everyone around him. So
it's a
tidy way to end it.
Good follow-up scene to his movie night scenes.
Yeah.
Where I'm here watching the movie, not because I want to engage in the act, but I want to observe everyone around me.
Yeah, I'm an James outsider. Goodall, right? And you're my apes, and I'm just watching you because I'm a scientist. Now he's like, no, this is part of my team. This is my family. I'm no longer an outsider.
I didn't mean for this to happen, and it did. And what he's effectively telling me is that, you know, because this guy, Phlox says he's been like 320 some planets. Reed's like, oh, this is the 32nd planet. He's like, oh, this is 328 for me. The big picture there for me, again, tying back to why is humanity so important to Star Trek, he is demonstrating that humanity has something extra that draws aliens in and becomes this universal coagulant.
Yeah, this glue, this thing.
And that's what's happened to him is that, you know, we're basically Borg and, you know, assimilate, and he has been assimilated. There's a whole subplot. There's several throwaway scenes about, oh my God, the mole is still in loose. Like, we've confirmed that there's a mole. We know for sure now, which I forget who brings it up, but like, I would love Travis to be like, oh yeah, my girlfriend mentioned that there was a mole. She said she was Starfleet intelligent. Like, what? Mayweather, what?
Ensign, where was this information 2 hours ago? It would have been really nice to know. Again, yeah, he finds where like Timmy's been pushed down the well or whatever, like on his shuttle craft.
I fully expected Tam Elbrum to be the double agent, and like, you know, where's the president at? We, you know, there's a rogue agent, and then, you know, him sabotage the ship and try to like crash it, and then like kick Tam Elbrum into the warp core or some sort of plasma hell. Nope, it's Ensign Massaro ambushes Archer at gunpoint and kills him. Tell my parents I'm sorry. And then he, you know, shoots himself in the head. Like, what a rushed way to wrap up that plot point, I guess.
Yeah, just want to make it so that we can close this loop, but we're not going to do anything interesting story-wise.
Colby so bad.
They do bust into his quarters, being like, it's you. And he's like, no, actually, it wasn't me. Like, it was some other guy.
Such a little fucking shit-stained bitch.
I would have, might as well just made it Colby, right? Like, it's the end of the fucking show. Make it Colby.
He was a fucking piece of shit the whole time. He's got reasons to be pissed off at Enterprise Trip specifically. And instead you're gonna
fucked up by the damn Orion girl, like,
you that know. Too. But instead they grab some fucking no name, you know, Harry Kim's Canadian best friend. And there he is, our domestic terrorist.
Yeah, like, it's the end of the fucking show. Go ahead and do something I'm gonna fucking care about. It's okay. You know, it's not gonna hurt you, but whatever. They don't make that choice. Or
a Mako. That would have been real good.
We do get Gannett getting released and Travis being like, maybe I'll give you more of my potent sexual prowess later. You know, I'll take you down in my penetrating shuttle real quick.
Yeah.
So that's all fine.
I'd hate for you to lose your soul in the transporter. I guess I'll give you a ride the old way.
He's a gentleman. Mm-hmm. And we get Archer trying to realize his destiny, right? And you think this is what the episode is building to, is him giving the speech and we're going to have a nice happy ending after. Great speech from Archer. Probably the only good one he gives in the whole series, in my opinion, that's truly memorable. You know, trying to essentially set the whole show and back, you know, off with it to say, you know, we have to come together as sentient species to continue to explore the galaxy. There's no other way forward but together, right? Like, we're too much of us and each other for us to deny that that's not our destiny.
Again, the kid, had things played out differently and the kid been around, that would have been a great, like, here's proof of our shared, you know, future together is this hybrid baby. Unification is possible. This thing that the bad guys feared as the end of humanity shows us that, you know, in fact, the future of humanity is a galactic community. Like, that would have been a great talking point. You know, I like that Tam Elbrum's like, oh, I guess I got to give the floor to Archer to really try to save this thing. Because up to this point, everybody's like, we're done. And these are the closing ceremonies, you know, before we table it. And table's code word for it's dead forever. And they show, you know, the slow pan shot of all the delegates there, which I'm looking and it's everybody in their alien uniforms and they've got the universal translator and everybody's got their fucking security lanyards.
The lanyards, man.
Here's your title for this episode to really show the optimistic, bright future. It's Lanyards for All. Truth, Justice, and Lanyards for All.
Truth, Justice, and Lanyards for All. I like it.
Archer gives a speech and everybody's like, oh my God, you know, forget about the riots at our gates and people calling us douchebags. And I didn't like what douche means. I looked it up on your Earth Wikipedia. You're foul people, both in practice and in spoken word. But Archer like hits that high speech roll and everybody's like, you know what? We're willing to ignore riots and angry rednecks. We'll give this thing a shot after all. And arguably, like, chill out Earth, too. Like, I'm assuming that thing was broadcast, so. Hey, I saved the day with diplomacy. What could go wrong?
Unfortunately, what goes wrong, and what is the last scene of the episode, is the revelation that, in fact, Elizabeth has not survived.
And Elizabeth's name's cursed.
It sadly is. And T'Pol is in kind of her formal mourning outfit that we've seen before on Vulcan. She's holding the Eidic pendant that she got from her own mother. She's clearly in a reflective mood. Trip comes in tears. And what they end up talking about, they're very close throughout all of this. You know, they are supporting each other. And, you know, Trip sits down and tearfully explains that Phlox has conveyed that, in fact, it's not a fundamental compatibility issue. It's just the way that they chose to clone Elizabeth that made it so that she couldn't survive. And that if a Vulcan and a human ever actually wanted to have a child together, that they could. And she holds his hand and he's fighting through it. And then the episode ends.
Dark ass end for a Star Trek episode, especially a everything is great and we save the day episode. Like, what is the goal with this? Why would you not just let the baby survive? Because you're at the end of the show, right? And you've already hinted that Trip and T'Pol are going to have children, like E2, right? E2. They had a super efficient captain guy.
I think loss is more potent. I think, like, it's so much more meaningful to say, yeah, okay, so this didn't work out because the intentions of the people who did it were to not have it work out, right? Like, that's what Paxton even implied during the whole episode, was like, I don't have to touch the baby to kill her, because he already knows there's an inherent flaw in the cloning process that it's not going to survive. She's part of the plan. And so that's grim and terrible. And that's the real consequence of what happens here. But it allows you the space for your actors to showcase their craft and grief, which is hard to do. And then second, presumably build on the idea that, like, okay, like, this would have been an unnatural way for this to happen, but someday it will happen. Like, we've grown too close. Like, someday humans and Vulcans are going to have children together. And obviously the implication that, in fact, Trip and T'Pol.
Yeah, because Spock's not the first hybrid, right?
And I think, like, canon has gone back and forth on that, technically. He's certainly the first in Starfleet.
Sure.
But I don't know, man. I don't necessarily think he was the very first, no.
I can tell you a lot of things that Star Trek is, and dead babies is not one of them. So, for me, this is a bad way to end a TV show about hope, optimism, the future together. Like, I think it would have been better to have, like, you know, this isn't on our timeline, but what has been, you know, everything goofy that's could happen between us, possibly from you going in the future or meeting your future self, telling you that we're going to get together and we're going to have babies. Me having a clone that was brought to life just to give me brain tissue that falls in love. Like, there has nothing been organic or natural about our attraction and our relationship together. So having a clone baby foisted upon us that we both embrace, and, you know, like, that would have been a great way to end it. And I get what you're saying. Like, yeah, a dead baby is strong thematics to put out there, but it's not Star Trek, and I'm not saying it's bad. It was a bad way to do it, but it's the wrong way. And again, when you're at the end, like, having the baby crying and keep people up, and whatever the hell, the Tom Bellano, what was the baby's name in that one?
Muriel.
You don't have to retell that plot again. You're at the end of this TV show, effectively. You can just give them a baby and say, and off they went. And that was the first human baby. And what all the other shit I said, you know, if the baby would have lived, it would have been a great speech point for Archer. And it would have been a great signal of, like, this is the next step for humanity. And, you know, there was a RoboCop trying to make this baby as a weapon to drive us apart. And instead it becomes this rallying beacon for the people.
I totally acknowledge and agree that you could have done it differently and had her survive. I'm just trying to defend the choice to have her die. And it would have been interesting if they had gone with a happier ending, but I personally like the sad ending. And I find it more reflective. But overall, great episode, great two-parter. Loved rewatching them. And for what they managed to do over the course of the story of season 4, does wrap it up, does give you a nice, satisfactory ending to the story. And considering where we were, that's pretty good. That's quite a feat. But it's not the end, is it, Peter?
No, we're going to be going into episode 4. I'm sorry, episode 22, season 4. written by Rick Berman, Bran Braga. Let's see. The capsule is Rick Berman and Bran Braga make an episode of Star Trek Enterprise that everybody hates and shits all over forever.
So, you may agree with this take ultimately, maybe not, but I'll put it out there in advance for you, something to think about. I think this episode would probably be fine if it was just like in the middle of season two or something. It's going to be one of those kind of things. People shit on this because it is the final episode of Enterprise and feels like a disrespectful ending to the show because it's ultimately not an episode of Enterprise at all. And I get that. But if you think of Terra Prime and Demons as the actual ending of the series, that was pretty good. That was pretty respectful, pretty interesting, helps send the whole thing off. This is just kind of like a coda to Star Trek as a whole, right? This was in the intention of, we know we're fucking done now. We've got to do something to try and say the end to all of this Trek we made, and we kind of came up with this. And I don't think it would be seen with the same negativity if it had just been a random idea they had for a Trek anniversary at some point, you know?
Let me see this thing, because I'm going to tell you right now, based on what I know and what I see, the feeling I have going into this, the fact that it's the executive producer or the owner of Star Trek at this point, bringing in next gen people on the last episode of Enterprise makes me feel like them saying, hey, we're acknowledging that this show was a failure and sucks on its own merit, and we're going to try and drag other talent in to get eyeballs in and basically give the show to other people on our parting note. And that is
that's definitely how it gets interpreted and received. The creators, including Manny Coto, said that was never the intention, but they certainly understood in the aftermath why it ended up hitting that way. And that they were trying to do this sort of like the way that Bruce Timm tried to end the DC animated universe during Justice League Unlimited. When he thought it was over and he was going to get another season, he just did two episodes that were essentially episodes of Batman Beyond when Terry McGinnis was like middle-aged and having to deal with like who his father was and like try to tie together the whole like universe by having like an ending that wasn't have anything to do with the show that you were watching. In that case, it kind of worked. And in this case, it doesn't.
Makes me think of a Full Metal Alchemist and what that turned into.
Yeah. Like that Full Metal Alchemist is a good example because they ended up doing that show again. Right? Like the first version ended up being so unsatisfactory near the end that they're like, what if we just did it over?
Yeah. Well, we don't really have an option. We're going into it, and I will watch it and try to keep in mind your what if scenario. This was a, you know, an anniversary episode well after. And I think that's a cool way to look at things. It's unrealistic because sets get torn down and everything gets sold off. But like, maybe if you'd put this one in the can and then played it as exclusive DVD content or something.
You'll hear us talk about it next week here on V'ger Please. Thanks again.